This morning I will be reading James chapter 1 verse 2. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations.
Good morning. Glad to see everybody today. It's been a bit of a, I'll talk about that in a second. First, I want to talk about the future for just a second. Today, we are getting into John chapter 8, and next week, well, maybe not next week, but in the next week or two, we're going to be getting into John chapter 9, and I'm pretty excited. We're getting into some awesome material in this book, and I really like chapter 8 and chapter 9 as we're going through these. If you want to just spend a little time with them on your own, I think they're really powerful chapters to know and kind of have in your heart that can be really encouraging and helpful. I think chapter 9 of the book of John, which we'll get to in a few weeks, is perhaps the most interesting single chapter in the whole Bible to me, like as a story. It is a really interesting story from beginning to end. And I'm excited to get into that. I'm excited to get into John 8 and ask you to be praying for me as I'm working through these chapters the next few weeks to get some wisdom and do them some justice as I'm trying to teach and preach them. And as we get to thinking about our lesson, you know, it's been a weird week. It's been real dark, I feel like it's rained a lot. I don't know about y'all. I'm going to do something that I don't think I've ever heard a preacher do necessarily in the pulpit exactly this way. I want to be real open and honest with y'all for a minute. I'm kind of sad. You know, I don't know about y'all how your week has gone, but you ever had a time where you just feels kind of sad? Not even necessarily a specific thing. Maybe it's everything. All the different things working together. Just the fact that you had to keep up with so much sometimes. But it's been one of those weeks where all this rain and darkness and everything else, I just got up this morning and I felt this way several times this week. I've just kind of been sad. And I was thinking about that as I looked at this text and as I got ready for us to look at John 8 throughout the week. Because I think this passage can be really encouraging to us, and we are just sad, struggling with difficulty when things look a little rough in our life. And I think that it's a passage that is encouraging. You know, we live in a world that's got a lot of darkness and difficulty. The Gospel of John repeatedly tries to open our eyes to the fact that many people in our world walk in that darkness and they can't see. It tells us in chapter 1, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The picture of Jesus as the light of the world returns in this section, John 8, that we're getting into this morning. And it really is about what is the answer to those times when everything just feels dark, or when we're struggling in our own darkness? What's the solution to the fact that the world is lost and blind and doesn't understand that state of being? How do we deal with some of that pain and sadness and darkness that the world hits us with? And I think John 8, verse 12, is a pretty amazing word of encouragement when you are struggling. I want us to read it, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know if you like to make highlights or underline or anything like that in your Bible. I think there's some good stuff in John 8 and 9 worth doing that with, but there's maybe not a better verse to just have underlined, remember, memorized than John 8, verse 12. It says, again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever walks in me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I love that. Jesus tells us that he is the light. And when we follow him, we've got something to guide us in all that darkness and difficulty and our suffering and our struggles and everything that's hard. We're not alone. He is the light of the world, the light of our life. Jesus makes this powerful declaration. He tells them, I am the light. And this is the second I am statement in the book of John, if you're keeping up. The first I am was, I am the bread of life, back in chapter 6, verse 35. But now the timing of this statement is important. Remember that they've been at this Feast of Tabernacles, this Feast of Booths, which is a Jewish feast they had throughout the year. We noted in John 7 that there was a water ceremony tied to the Feast of Tabernacles, which is why Jesus on the last day cried out, "If anyone thirst, come to me and let him drink." The Feast of Tabernacles also had a nightly counterpart. They had a water ceremony during the day where they remembered the water that God gave in the wilderness, how God is the source of sustenance and can bring water even in a desert. But during the evenings, they would light these four huge lights, these four huge candelabras in the temple court. And there was not an area in Jerusalem that couldn't see those things from where they were lit. They were very large, and it was just supposed to be a sign to everyone in the area. It was a reminder of their wandering in the wilderness on the way to the promised land. How, remember God led us in a pillar of fire, and they would light these giant fires, these giant candelabras with fire in them, to remind everybody that fire's still here. God's still here with us, leading us. His presence is still in Jerusalem. So I want you to imagine those blazing torches and those flames burning through the night, each night through this feast. And then Jesus gets up while these lights are burning, reminding everybody that God's presence is still with his people, and tells them that he is the light of the world. And the implications there are far-reaching. Jesus is saying that just like God was a blazing fire, you know, that symbolized his presence when he led Israel in the wilderness, Jesus is saying, I'm that same God. I am a light that's going to lead you just like God led the people in the desert. I'm a light for your lives, a beacon. You know, as God's people, his spirit dwells in us like the temple. And it walks with us through our struggles. And this statement about him being light was several things. First, it was a claim to be God himself. Jesus was equating himself with God. He does this a lot in the book of John. There's a lot of the Old Testament language that would describe God as a light. Psalm 27, verse 1 says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation." Isaiah chapter 60, verse 19 says, "The sun shall no more light your light by day, nor for brightness shall the moon give you light, but the Lord will be your everlasting light, and your God will be your glory." God tells the people, I'm the light that's going to guide you. David said that the Lord was his light and that the Lord was his salvation. Isaiah prophesied that the Lord would be light for the people. And Jesus comes along and declares, guess what? I'm that guy. I am the light. I'm God. This is a point we see a few times in the gospel, but that only God gives light to the world. Only God can give light to the eyes. Only God can bring light to the heart. And only God can bring light into existence. Second, when Jesus says that he is the light of the world, it was a claim that he was the Messiah. It was a claim only the Messiah could make. The prophets pictured the world and Israel as in darkness. God is separate from the world and can't be in a relationship with sin or evil. Therefore, the world is in darkness, and even Israel, whom God was supposed to be able to have a relationship with and be with, was covered in sin and darkness. This was a huge problem they had all through the Old Testament, as God tried to be with them, and they just could not behave as his people. Malachi spoke of a hopeful day when this would not be the case. He says, "But for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness shall rise with healing in its wings. You shall go out leaping like calves from the stall." In Malachi 4, verse 2. Simeon, when he met Jesus as a baby in Luke 1, 78-79, says similar things in the temple. Jesus is the Messiah. He's the light. And with him here, there's a possibility of a real relationship with God. And finally, Jesus calling himself the light of the world means that he is the head of God's people, of the true Israel, and that people must attach themselves to him if they want to belong to the Father. Jesus is saying, I'm the light. So if you want to get to the source of that light, if you want to get to the Father, I'm the one you have to go through. I'm the leader. I am the beacon. Isaiah spoke of a hopeful day when the people who were in covenant relationship with God would be the light of the world, where we would reflect God's light to the world around us. And Isaiah 42, verses 6 and 7, it says, I am the Lord, and I've called you in righteousness. I will take you by the hand and keep you. I will give you as a covenant for the people. a light for the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon, from the prison those who sit in darkness. Isaiah talks about a future for the people of God, where the people of God are following the light that is God and then shining that light to the world around them and helping them to see God as well. And while all these points are part of what Jesus is teaching the Pharisees, I think this third point is the force of what he's saying. He's trying to get them to realize that he is the light. And so if they want to find their way, if they want to be productive servants of God, if they want to show the world who God is, they've got to follow that light. They've got to let that light guide them. They need to listen to him. To take all the metaphor out of it, Jesus is saying, I'm the light, so pay attention. Stop ignoring me. Stop fighting me. And just listen. Work with me, please. But Jesus doesn't just make a claim about himself in verse 12. He also makes a claim about his followers. And I find a lot of comfort from the claim Jesus makes about himself, but maybe I'm just selfish. I find even more comfort from the claim he makes about how I get to be when I'm with him. He says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I just want to like stick that over like all our entryways here, you know, just write it as the law says, you know, as frontlets between my eyes and just everywhere that I can see it to remember that statement. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Think about what he's saying. Following Jesus continues to parallel that imagery of being in the wilderness when the Israelites followed the pillar of fire. Following Jesus is not just saying that we are followers of Jesus. Those who follow Jesus have the light to walk by, have a direction to go, and have some guidance. Jesus says that you're going to have the light of life, that you're not. He doesn't say that you won't ever walk in darkness, Jesus does not say that you will not walk in darkness, but will walk in the light. He says that you'll have the light of life. You'll possess the light. You'll be in a relationship with the light. Following Jesus means attaching yourself to Jesus, and following Jesus means going where he goes, believing what he teaches and doing what he says. Let's put it another way. What Jesus is saying is this is what discipleship looks like. Without the light of Jesus, we can't see anything in life properly. It's like Jesus is saying, all right, before you knew me, before I was here, you didn't understand how to look at things. You didn't understand how to deal with your difficulties. You didn't understand God. It's like the world is a pitch black room. And if you're walking around a pitch black room, it's pretty hard to tell what's in that room. You know, you might bump into a chair or a bench, but it'd be pretty hard to figure out the exact dimensions of that room or what that room was even for. And Jesus says, but with me, you can see life for what it is. I can be your light. Then you can look at life properly. Without Jesus, you can't even begin to see life properly. You don't know the purpose of it or what you're supposed to be doing. You can't look at God properly. You can't comprehend what you need. There's only one thing you need when you're in the dark, and that is a light. And Jesus is saying, I'm that light for life in the world. When you're in dark, you've got to follow me if you want any direction. You know, when you lose power and the sun goes down, what do? You find you a flashlight or a lamp or something, if you got a gas lamp, a candle, and you use those to find your way around your house. Jesus is saying, if you want to know how to live in this world, if you want to know how to follow me, you've got to follow me. If you're going to know how to make it, you've got to follow me. We need Jesus as that light for our lives, because without him, we're just lost. Let's go on a little bit farther. Jesus makes a statement about himself in verse 12. He makes a statement about his followers in verse 12. But he goes on to make a final statement about those who don't follow him in verses 13 through 20. It says, so the Pharisees said to him, you're bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony's not true. And Jesus answered, even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true, for I know where I came from and where I'm going. But you don't know where I come from or where I'm going. You judge according to the flesh. I judge no one. Yet even if I do judge, my judgment is true. For it's not I alone who judge, but I and the Father who sent me. In your law, it's written that the testimony of two people is true. I am the one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me. And they said to him, therefore, where is your Father? And Jesus answered, you know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. And these words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple. But no one arrested him because his hour had not yet come. Jesus tells the people, the Pharisees, they're amazed by what he has to say. And will they readily accept him now that he said this? No. We've seen enough in John's gospel to know that, of course, they're going to fight with him some more. The typical response of every human being is some doubt, some unbelief at first. Rather than listening to Jesus, they are reacting against Jesus and rejecting his claims. And the basis of their rejection this time is, okay, Jesus, but we can't trust you. You're just one guy. You are telling us about yourself. What proof do we have? You know, you can't just testify about yourself. They don't want to believe his testimony, so they're just trying to come up with a reason to reject him. You know, we do this today. We, even as Christians, we struggle sometimes to hear what Jesus says and to do it, to listen to him. We conjure up reasons why, oh God, I don't know if I can do that, or I don't know if I can believe that. And the problem is that we don't believe sometimes. The problem is that we don't want to believe. So we soothe our pricked conscience by coming up with a reason why we could possibly believe, why we could not possibly believe something Jesus says or commands us to do. But our rejection, our reason for it's weak. And the Pharisees' reason here is weak. Jesus has already given his witnesses back in chapter 5. He's really clear about laying out his case for why he's the Messiah. In the 5th chapter, he points out several different witnesses, but he doesn't do that again. This time he just points out that his testimony is true because he's telling the truth. He says, look, just trust me. We've had this conversation over and over again. We've fought about this several times. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not going to try and convince you with some fancy argument. I'm just telling you the truth. Believe me. There's been nothing false in anything I've said. There's been no reason not to trust Jesus. But Jesus gives a simple solution. He says, since his teaching and his authority come from the Father, then the Father is his witness. You know, if they really want to witness, the Father himself can verify the legitimacy of his words. He's a witness to himself, not as an ordinary person, but as a son of God. He's saying, you can trust me because I'm the light of the world. Jesus, as divine, testifies of himself, and the Father testifies to him as well. Because everything that Jesus says matches up with everything God has been telling the people of Israel this whole time. There's two witnesses right there. Jesus says, if you listen to the law of Moses, that's enough. You should listen to me. Believe me. And the Pharisees are failing to recognize the truth of Jesus' words. They're not hearing what he has to say. Jesus' words are valid because they are in conformity with everything else that the Father's given him, with the mission that the Father's giving him. Everything that Jesus is doing and saying matches up with what God has said. Now, how much were they listening to what God said becomes the problem here. Notice their lousy response in verse 19. They say, where is your Father? You know, if you say, if your Father testifies for you, where is your Father? And if they really knew who Jesus was, then they would know exactly who his Father was and that the Father had sent him. Verse 19 contains an important spiritual truth. Jesus says, if you knew me, you would know my Father also. The only way to know the Father is to know Jesus. And how do you know Jesus? You get to know Jesus by following him. What did Jesus tell every person who came to him? Come and follow me. Let me lead your life in this world of darkness. Don't follow your own path. You're in the dark. Jesus is the light that leads you to the Father. Jesus was sent from the Father to show you the path to walk to the Father. Whoever follows Jesus will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. True belief is not just to hear what Jesus has to say, but to follow him, to follow his advice, to follow his way of living. And I think we read this passage and ask myself, you know, do I listen to him? Am I like the Pharisees that go, you know, I don't know about this. I don't know if I can do this, or I don't know if I can do that, or I don't know if I can be on the same page as Jesus. And it kind of challenges me to evaluate, am I listening? Am I following him? Or am I walking in darkness again? What does the world see in us? What does it see in me? Do they see me walking with the light because I'm following Jesus? Or do they see me walking in darkness looking just like the world? And I think that's a challenge for each of us to ask ourselves as we look at this text. And to ask ourselves, you know, will I come to the light? Will I set aside all these obstacles I put in my way and allow myself to submit to what Jesus has to say? I think that's something we're thinking about for each of us this morning as we think about our own lives. You know, what does it feel like to walk in the light, to follow Jesus in a world of difficulty and struggle and times when we just feel down or sad? The most powerful illustration I always think about when I think about what it means to be happy is, I've told the story before of how one day I helped shear about 200 sheep. It was a crazy experience. Somebody who worked with sheep asked me, hey, you want to come help me for a favor on Thursday? I'll pay you a little bit. I said, sure. He said, all right, meet me at 7 o'clock at the church building. We're just going to run around a few places. I said, okay. And like 12 hours later, I was done and the sorest I've ever been in my life. I get there, I find out, he's like, all right, we're going to shear a bunch of sheep. And I said, well, I don't know how to shear sheep. And he's like, that's fine. You don't have to. I've got one of the best sheep shearers in the nation right here with us. He's a top guy, won a lot of contests. What we're going to do is we're going to go to a bunch of farms today and we're going to shear some sheep. And I got one job for you. I need you to bring him the sheep. And I said, how do I do that? He said, well, okay, well, sheep are kind of dumb. They don't realize what we're doing. They don't know that we're going to help them. You know, they need to be sheared. They don't know we're going to help them. So I need you to wrestle those sheep to the ground, flip them over, grab them by the front legs, drag them over to this guy, and let him take care of them. And I did that about 200 times. That was tough. Sheep are not easy to deal with. And after about 50, you get real tired of flipping them upside down. But I tell you know what made that worth it, like the best part of all that? As I remember, the first place we went, they had tiny little sheep. I like those things. They were easy. They were only about 20, 30 pounds. But there's a little big sheep, and I grabbed them. I flip them over real careful, and I bring them over to the guy, and he cuts off all this excess fur. They had a lot of extra wool they needed to get off of them. It had been too long since they'd been sheared. It weighed a lot by the time you got done with it. And you know what those things did when we took that fur or that wool off of them? We had a little door that came down, little garage-type door for the area they were stuck in. And as they were getting done with them, we were getting them out of there real quick and then shutting the door so the ones that hadn't been sheared could stay inside. And I remember one of them got that wool taken off of him, and he just starts jumping around. Just jumping around and celebrating. You know, you can just tell he's feeling light and making these little bleating noises real cute. Runs towards the door and jumps up and headbutts it. And he's fine. You know, he just goes on. I got a hard old head, but he's just celebrating. He's just happy. And it just looks like every problem he's ever had is off of him. And when I think about what it means to walk in light and to follow Jesus, I think that's the goal. It's supposed to be finding a way in a world that is dark and sad and often very difficult. It's remembering that despite all these difficulties and all the struggles and the problems, Jesus has offered me some direction and some help and some love, and promised me that I'll never have to walk in darkness, lost and alone. That all those difficulties that I've got, I can kind of toss them off a little bit, get some peace, some comfort, some relief. It's like this weightlessness. I think of how the Old Testament, how does it talk about sin so often? It talks about it like a burden, like a thing that gets stuck on you and you just can't get off. But Jesus has offered us a way to be clean, to be with him. I think about what he says when he says, come to me, and I will give you rest. This morning, I don't know how your life is. Maybe you feel like you're walking in darkness. Well, if that's the case, I want to encourage you to come to him, to come to the light, get some relief, get some rest. Maybe you are a Christian, and you feel like you come to Jesus, you tried to follow him, but man, you're just struggling. You just feel beat down. That's okay. Sometimes we struggle. We hurt. That's part of being human. And that's why God didn't just send his son, but with his son, he sent us a whole group of people to love us and encourage us as we follow him together. So if you're struggling this morning, we want to love and encourage you. We want to pray for you if that's what you need. Anything we can do for y'all this morning, be happy to do it. If you have a need, please come as we stand and as we sing.